Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Of course, every investor's goal is profits, leveraging your invested dollars to grow your retirement portfolio. But during volatile times, achieving this goal takes a well-reasoned strategy to turn sudden market moves into profits. Profits and Protection, Taking Advantage of Volatile Times. That's our latest addition to the webinar library, open to InvestTalk insiders. Join up for free. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. End of commercial, and now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to a Thursday edition of InvestTalk. It is October 20th, 2016, and this is, of course, our daily roundtable on managing your money. And we focus on investing because it's really the only way to make your money work for you. In other words, instead of working for the money, you want the money to work for you, and you have to do that through investments. And of course, we're big on practicing time-tested techniques that have, you know, been proven effective in years past. Now, some of these time-tested techniques are not effective every year. Investing is a complex movement of different parts. Anyways, we call all this above average investing for the average investor. And today, large cap stock mutual funds are back in favor. Did you know that? As investors hunt for higher yields. So should you join the rush back to large cap stocks? And that's going to be our main talking point today. But you have some say too, not just me. The show is driven by you and what you want to talk about. So bring your topic to the table. And I want to hear your questions and also about any investing experiences you want to share. One of the biggest parts of investing, at least studied, is economic trajectory. The most important economic indicators to follow, as I've said many times and I've written about, are the leading economic indicators. Because that affects future economic activity. And for stocks, earnings is all that matters. And that means future economic activity is very important to the earnings of corporations. So what do you follow? How do you find out? What should I track? Well, the ECRI, Economic Cycle Research Institute, is a good thing to follow. And what do they look at? Well, they look at housing permits. That's a leading economic indicator. Okay. They look at unemployment insurance claims. It comes out every week. By the way, we had housing permits come out this week. Did you see it? It's going to be part of another talking point I want to discuss today. Unemployment insurance claims come out weekly. And what do they tell us? The ISM number, Institute Supply Management Manufacturing Survey. What about that? Delivery times of that report are important. Non-farm payroll, of course, is important because, you know, you want employment activity. Average hours worked in a week. You want to see that growing. Do you know what it is? Anybody ever pay attention to it? It's important. And, of course, the unemployment rate and all those basic stuff, but not all of them are leading economic indicators. Now, do you have questions about reading the economy or the market? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART. We turn now to our 24-hour listener line. Let's go ahead and start with the Q&A portion of the program. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, I have a question about my 401k. I am 24 years old, and I have 100% of my 401k invested in an S&P index fund. And I was wondering if you think that that is a bad idea. I'm young, and I'm keeping an eye on it, but I was wondering if having it in an S&P index fund is a bad idea. Let me know what you think. Thank you, and I love your show.
No, it's not a bad idea. It's a good idea. The S&P 500, if you can just let it grow, keep investing in it, keep adding to it, let it go, and you're young, let it go for 30 years, you'll do very, very, very well. This is where you're going to have problems. You're going to want to tinker with it. You're going to say, oh, man, I've lost a lot of money. I think I'll get out. No, that's exactly the opposite of what you should do. That's the biggest problem that I see people having when they do indexing. I like indexing. I think indexing is good, especially when you're young and you got many, many years to go. You want to index. You want to stay in the market. It's when you get closer to retirement or your personality is such that you can't handle the volatility, then you could do something else. But doing that something else means you're probably going to need someone like me to help you to figure out what you can do to make you keep you content and still grow your money. But indexing is very good. Now, should you join the rush back into large cap stocks? Well, the S&P 500 index is a large cap index. And that's one of our talking points today. Also, I'm going to discuss why people don't save money for old age. Why don't they? They can. Many of them do, but many of them don't either. Why? So we're going to talk about that. Talk about housing this week. The housing numbers came out. New home starts, new home sales, and existing home sales. What do those numbers tell us? The reason why I bring it up, because they were very unusual. I didn't say bad. I said unusual. And, you know, we talked about the end of QE and the Fed raising rates. What is Janet Yellen's next move? Okay, I'm not talking about raising rates. What if the economy goes down? What if they start going slipping into recession? What can she do? That's one of the questions everybody's asking themselves. What can she do? What happened to the market today? Well, it was down. The Dow was down 40, the S&P down, the NASDAQ down 5, and the S&P down 3. So it was a little weak. We had two up days and now followed by this down day. And before the up days, we had four or five down days in a row. So it's kind of an interesting week. 888-99-CHARTER is our number. I'm glad you're with us today. Before we go on, I want to tell you what we're planning for our next Saturday Morning Wealth Conference. We're anticipating some big changes in 2017. So we've assembled some data, some information, and a way to bring into focus and the changes that are likely to make you want to maybe adjust your portfolio. How to Prosper in a Year of Change, 2017. It's Saturday morning, 9 to noon, November 12th in San Jose. And we're going to focus on certain things. It's a three-hour session, as you can see. We will show you how global politics can disrupt your stock markets, we will help you understand the impact of this changing central bank policy, maybe explain why you should transition from growth to value investing. So if you sign up for our next Saturday Morning Wealth Conference by midnight, November 5th, and you can take $10 off the $45 ticket price. You can sign up online at investtalk.com.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Jake calling out of York, Pennsylvania. I was wondering what you would evaluate Skechers at, symbol SKX. It's got a PE ratio around 12.5, which I think is very low considering the last 5 years. I know it reported weak earnings last quarter, but it had some other good numbers that I see, including its price-to-sales ratio and the return on equity. So I'm just wondering if you think this is a good buy point. I look forward to hearing your answer on the podcast.
Okay, that's Skechers, everybody. SKX, we talked about it, was it last week or earlier this week? Skechers, it markets men and women's, children's, casual, dress, athletic, footwear, department, specialty stores. And I mentioned that I thought it was fairly reasonable price, too. It's going to make $2.03 next year, and it's a $22, almost $23 stock. So that tells you, what's the 4P? 11? 12? 12? As he mentioned, 12.5. And the five-year range is 12 to 99. Return on equity is very good, 21. And it did have problems with the sales. Not that the sales were that bad. It just didn't meet expectations. But the sales are still growing 10% or more. And earnings are going up 9% this year, another 13% next year. They don't have hardly any debt. Have very good return on equity numbers, 21%. Everything about it's good. Now, I mentioned before, this is probably a good place to buy it, and you have a really good out on the low it made in September of $21, $21.50. So if it breaks that low, you got to get out. But, you know, this is a very good price for Skechers. So I think I would consider it. 888-99-CHART. We're going to talk about what? Why investors are putting money into large cap stocks, and should you follow suit? Because the category pulled in $1.2 billion in the most recent week that they keep track of this stuff. By the way, the most recent week is probably that they keep track of. It was probably third week of June. Okay. I mean, third week of September. And, you know, the inflow was as big as it's been since June, $1.2 billion. And, you know, the prior week before that, $813 million left that category. So people came back in. Why? Why is that? And it probably because people, you know, when the Fed met, remember in September, they said they were not going to raise rates. That probably made people think, well, I need to get some income somewhere, so maybe I'll go for those dividend stocks again. And that's been a favorite theme for some time. So I think that might be it. Overall, mutual funds, exchange-traded funds added about $2 billion in that week. And 1.2 of that billion was into the large cap. So not much went into mid cap, small cap, not much. Bond funds took a lot more in, $6.4 billion. So more money came into the bonds part of the market. Why? All looking for yield, aren't they? Looking for yield. Now, why? Is that something that we should concern ourselves with? And frankly, as an investor, I don't think it really concerns you. I don't think it's something that you should be tracking, in other words. I don't know if it's all that important, other than it just is interesting to know. You need to stick with leading economic indicators. I think that would be a lot smarter to do. Stick with the leading economic indicators. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's go talk to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good, Steve. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I was wondering what your opinion would be for KLAC.
KLAC. Okay, I'll take a look at that. You want to be a buyer?
I actually bought some earlier, and it's up in the after hours. Should I get rid of it or stay?
Okay, this is KLA Tencor Corporation, and it's a $11 billion company, so it's a large company, large cap company. Manufactures process control and yield management systems for nanoelectronics, LED, and data storage markets. So it's in the electric semiconductor equipment sector. earnings are going to go up 6% this year to $4.96 a share, then another 12% next year to $5.58. And it's a $72 stock. So sales have gone up in recent couple quarters dramatically. And that's very different from the quarters before that. So sales have all of a sudden the last two quarters jumped. And so the first question you want to ask yourself is, why is that? What happened to cause these sales to go up? I mean, we were talking sales before the last two quarters, which was 22% growth and 17% growth. The sales before that was minus 4%, plus 5%, flat. These are the quarters before that. So something happened to jump their sales, and I would like to know that. Having said that, it's probably a good place to buy the stock. If those sales are sustainable, therefore the earnings are sustainable, then you're looking at a stock that's around 15 PE, and I think that's pretty reasonable for a stock that's growing this fast and a company that's big and paying a dividend of 2.9%. So I kind of like it.
I do. Okay, so I'll stick around then. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. I'm Steve Peasley, and this is InvestTalk. Remember, we're not all stocks and bonds. We're open to any money question because there's a lot of money questions to have out there that people want to talk about. So give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
I have a question about an article I am reading. It's titled Deutsche Bank to Redeem 8 Exchange-Traded Notes. I happen to own shares of one of these notes, and I was wondering if you can explain what that means. The value of this ETN has gone down since I've purchased it, so I'm curious as to what price I'm going to get or what this exactly means. Thank you very much. Bye.
Exchange traded note, and they're liquid. They're taking them off the market is what they're doing. So they're giving you the money that they're worth, the net asset value, whatever it is. So that's what you're going to get. And it's going to disappear. That exchange traded note is going to be gone. So that is, you know, there's certain products like certain oil trusts that derive their income from oil that they eventually disappear because the underlying asset is used up. There's products that the companies can take back and give you money, you know, the net asset value. What if a mutual fund closed? What would happen then? Well, you would get the value in cash of the net asset value of the fund. So that's what they're basically doing. They're just, and probably the reason being is because it was losing money and there wasn't much trading in it. And this is very common for very large institutions. They get rid of the crap, or excuse my friend, they get rid of the investments that are not good, that don't perform. They get rid of them. Then they don't have to report on them anymore. And all they did, they're left with the things that do work. And then they report on, well, how great are they? Oh, look how great we are. Deutsche Bank, we have 30 funds that outperform, blah, 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 blah. Well, they don't talk about the ones that gone. That's very common in the industry. So you got to be careful. You know, you just can't, those don't buy into what anybody says. Anyway, that sounds like what they're doing. Okay. Why people don't save money for old age. That's going to be one of our talking points. I'm going to get to it right after I talk to Art in Menlo Park. How are you doing, Art? How's it going?
Great, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
I just had a general question on oil service stocks because there seems like there's quite a few of them that I'd like to get into. And I see that the oil prices are going up. I was just wondering, do you think it's time to, like, at least buy, like, half positions in some of these oil services?
Well, eventually, Art, they will recover. That's totally very possible. I mean, not possible. It's going to happen. Okay. The question is, are we at a bottom in those oil service stocks? And I think we're awful close. I don't think oil is going to take off like it, you know, I don't think in terms of oil is going to go back up to $100 a barrel. Not for years and years and years, if ever. And some of the reasons being is because oil is plentiful right now. Art, I don't know how old you are, but do you remember in the 70s and 80s, the oil scare, the shortage back then?
Yeah.
And it was in every newspaper, on the news, that we were running out of oil. And here we are, how many decades later, and we're much more bigger consumers of oil, and we got tons of it everywhere. Isn't it hard to believe? I mean, just what happened? Anyways, that tells you don't believe everything you read or hear. It's not necessarily true. But I think that they are a pretty low price. I think that the oil service stocks will recover because they're always going to have this need the servicing. But I don't think you can go back to your heydays of huge returns. I don't think that's coming, Art. So be very careful which ones you buy.
It seems like quite a few of them are down, like close to 75%, it looks like.
Yes.
And as long as they don't go under, I guess some of them look like they're in, you know, they'd be pretty good to at least get position.
I would definitely buy the stronger ones, Art. Buy the stronger ones, the bigger ones, not the little guys.
Right.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Thanks
appreciate
a lot,
it.
Steve.
Thanks, Art. Why people don't save for old age? Why don't they? There was some surveys, some analysts, a lot of people were looking into this. Why? Because we all know that people generally don't save enough money for retirement. That's so obvious and proven over and over and over again. But why don't they? And the reason that they have decided, or one of the reasons is, anyways, is because people don't see themselves as old. Even when they're old. My father-in-law is 90 years old. He doesn't see himself as old. He knows he's 90. He knows that. He's all there. But he doesn't see himself. He sees himself very much younger in his mind. Now, maybe that's the problem. We don't see our future selves. We don't see it. So getting old, we don't expect it. We don't see it. We don't need to save money for it because it's not going to happen in your mind, even though chronological age is there and you know it. Interesting. It's all psychological. It's one of those, interesting. 888-99-CHARGE is our number. We're open to your money questions anytime. You get through right now. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and you're listening to Invest Talk.
We thank you for subscribing. In case we haven't mentioned it, KPP Financial serves clients all across the U.S. And if you'd like Steve to review your retirement portfolio personally, Steve carves out a few hours each month to meet with our podcast subscribers on Skype or telephone. To set up a time, go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review. And now we continue with Invest Talk.
Hey, guys. Matt in Minneapolis here, and love the show, love everything about it. I have a quick question for you. What do you think of purchasing the stock Hasbro for get some dividend on it and also some growth? I've looked at it a little bit, and it seems to have a really good return on equity, and things seem to be good about it, and people love its products. Love to hear what you guys think about it. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Everything you said about the company is good, is right. It's just expensive. Hasbro, everybody. Hasbro out of Rhode Island. Manufactured traditional high-tech toys, games, and interactive products sold worldwide. It's going to make $4.11 this year. That's 17% more than last year. Then $4.53 per share next year, another 10% increase. Sales are growing in the double digits, between 10 and 15% every quarter for the last four quarters. The stock is $82.47. So at $4, if they're going to make $4.53, that means that PE is around 19 or so going forward. And the average PE for the last 5 years is 12 to 25. So it's kind of, you know, right there in the middle, a little bit expensive. A return on equity is 28%, which is very good. Cash flow is very good. Pays a 2.5% dividend. They have a little debt, but nothing that they can't handle. So then looking at a chart, it looks like it's holding above the 200-day moving average. But I would still submit that I think it's a little bit pricey. I don't think it really deserves much more than a 15 PE. So that means it's worth like $70 or so, 75 maybe, and it's 82. So I think it's a little pricey in my personal opinion. Hasbro, H-A-S is the symbol, H-A-S. Okay. We had two reports on housing this week out. One was housing starts, and the big surprise there is it fell 9%. Huge number, really. The last time you had to go all the way back to March of 2015 to get to that many number of new starts. So it's really fell sharply. However, you might want to you always got to look a little deeper in these reports. So this is the housing starts, where builders are starting to build new houses. And if you looked at it, what happened is the multifamily units fell near 39% in that month. We're talking about September. Where single family homes actually rose 8%. Okay. Then we had today existing housing report that actually went up 3%. In all areas. And now remember at the top of the show I said you got to look at the leading economic indicators. These two reports I just gave you are lagging economic indicators. But there is a part of the new home sales report, new starts report, that is a leading economic indicator, a part called permits to build new housing in the future. That's a leading economic indicator. Obviously, you get a permit to build new housing, so it's leading. That was up 6.3% to 1.23 million units. So it's kind of a mixed bag. But overall, even though you saw the top line numbers and new home sales down 9%, oh my God, it really wasn't that bad. But you know, leave it to the financial writers to stress the sensational part of the number, and that really doesn't make any sense to you and me as investors. What it says is the housing market is still pretty solid. Now, the last couple of weeks, mortgage rates have gone up. We'll see if that affects anything. I think that, you know, when the mortgage rates start to creep up and start to rise, I think that's going to be more impactful on the housing market than anything else. Because the prices have already really gone up pretty high. One other little part of this, the new home sales that were sold that were up 8%, there was 34% of it was new first-time buyers, which is pretty good. They went up a little bit for the month. And that's tough because the housing prices are pretty high. So what do you do at our portfolio reviews? What do we do? You hear me talk about them. First, together we review your current strategy. What do you do? Where are you now? What is your strategy? Do you have one? So we talk about that. We look at your financial. I ask about where you are. Are you saving in your 401k? Do you have a 401k? You're saving it. Do you have children at home? Do you have to pay? You have to support an elderly person at home. Are you paying down your mortgage? Do you have any other debt? Those kinds of questions. Insurance, life insurance. Do you have any? Just to generally get to know each other initially, and then I focus on how much risk you like taking and what kind of risk that you want to take, and then try to figure out if that's actually what you are taking. It's kind of informal. There's nothing really structured about it, but that's what we do. And I have a new date in San Ramon. It's November 1st, if you want to meet with me. And if you're not near one of our California offices, I can still meet with you via Skype or telephone. I've been doing that all week. It's pretty easy. If you'd like to set up a time, just go to investtalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab, and then Portfolio Review.
Now, InvestTalk Real Estate. Chevy Akison, real estate agent and investor, speaks with Justin Klein about self-directed IRA.
Now, a lot of people have 401ks and IRAs, and there's a new type of vehicle that's becoming more popular. It's a self-directed IRA, and a lot of people are starting to consider using that money to invest in real estate. And I know you have one, Chevy. So what have you seen of the opportunities and the pitfalls of those type of transactions?
Well, you know, if you have the right professional assisting you to put it together, it can be a great tool. The one that I have checkbook control of it. You know, you got to make sure you have enough money in there, because if you buy a property for $150,000, and you have 160 in it and it needs 20 grand worth of repair, you're kind of stuck.
Yeah. So you have to make that repair with the money within that self-directed IRA.
You can only use the money that's within the self-directed IRA. So you got to make sure you have enough money in it, but it can be a great tool.
Yeah. And some of the other pitfalls of the self-directed IRA is you can't use the property, right? You can never live in it. It has to be a rental. You can't even go work on it, because then you're putting some actual sweat.
You can't even have a family member manage it, but I can't give legal or tax advice. So we're going to have to leave that to the attorneys and the lawyers. But what they told me is I can't even let my brother-in-law manage the property. So there are some rules, and you got to work within those rules. But if you can do it, they're relatively simple.
Yeah, and obviously there's always opportunity, right, within the rental market. It's just a matter of what part of the country, right? Here in California, in today's day and age, probably difficult to find great rental opportunities.
There's always opportunity in almost every market. With that being said, there's, you know, better opportunities. I invest all over the country. Most of my cash flow investments are out of state. Again, like right now in California, I think there is some opportunity still in the vacation rental market, but there's all sorts of things you got to look out for. So you want to make sure you're working with a professional. You know, some cities have codes that allow vacation rentals, some don't. if you have an HOA, you gotta be careful of that. You know, I'm also investing in Florida right now because there's a lot more foreclosures there, so there's a lot more distressed properties. So it hasn't seen the spike that a lot of other areas have. I'm always looking all over the country to see where I feel like the best opportunities are. There's a lot of great data online now, and it's amazing what you can do.
If you have a question, 888-99-CHART is the number to call or contact KPP's own licensed realtor and financial advisor, Justin Klein. Click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
Hey guys, this is Steve from Oakland. I have a quick question. I heard a few weeks ago you guys were talking about Brazil and emerging markets, and I was wondering what you think about the following two stock tickers. It's CWGIX and DWGAX. They're both world funds, and just wanted to know what your thoughts are in terms of holding them for the next 1 to 2 years. Thanks.
The first one was American Cap World Growth and Income Fund. I'm not convinced the income part is a great place to be if it's all derived by bonds, but different parts of the world, bonds work differently. I mean, they may be undervalued, and it's hard for me to just say that because I don't know what's inside these funds. I can't tell you. I can tell you that world growth the next year looks kind of depressing. According to the IMF, they've been reducing prospects for world growth all year long for next year and this year and next. So I'm not convinced that these two will work that well. I'm not. I don't. So I would not be interested in any world growth fund at this point. I think you need to be a little bit more focused. And I would come back to the U.S. And I would not mind having some exposure in emerging markets. World, there's too many parts of the world that I don't care for, right? You know, for the long term, even not just a year or two. So no, I can't recommend them. I really can't. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? How about, you know, we have been dealing with QE for years, right? Ever since we came out of the recession in 2009. And it wasn't very good, and so the Fed decided to embark on a QE. And the Fed has been trying to spark the economy. Not only our Fed, but all central banks around the world have been trying to do that by lowering interest rates, which also happened to result in a currency war. Okay, and so setting that aside, here we are in 2016, and a lot of central banks around the world are starting to realize that their quantitative easing didn't work, hasn't worked in the last few years. So what can the Fed do next? Remember, we've talked about, I think it was just yesterday, I said, you know, it would have been smarter if they would have started raising rates a little bit faster, not fast, but a little bit faster, because in the next recession, what are they going to do? Well, I gave that some thought. And I read some things about, you know, what Janet Yellen said. She said, and I'm reading in between the lines after what she said. She said that she could see us embarking on a robust, quote, robust aggregate demand policy, quote, high pressure economy, end of quote. In the short term. And how would she do that? Increase business sales. Well, yeah, everybody wants to increase business sales. But this is a speech that she's talking about. How does the Fed get involved to make that happen? And she said, it would be smart to encourage capital spending. So how are the Fed going to do that? Okay, well, their traditional method was lowering interest rates. But the interest rates are so very low, they don't really have much ammunition in that traditional method, do they? What else could they do? This is what they could do. I'm not saying they're going to do it, but this is what they could do. They could start buying hard assets. They can buy hard assets. Take all that money that they have, that they printed, that they produced, and buy gold, buy silver, buy lumber, maybe food, grains. You're saying, well, how would that help? if they start taking and holding these kinds of items, buying more and more and more, would that not stimulate something? Now, you should ask me if I think it's smart, and I don't. I really don't. I think it's stupid, actually, because it still doesn't address the underlying problem. And the underlying problem is we have a very slow economy, not because of the Federal Reserve is around. It's because we have other fundamentally structural problems that need to be addressed. Now, do we have too much debt? That could be argued that we do or we don't. Do we have, what we don't have is we don't have productivity. We don't have robust growth. How do we get robust growth? Well, if you let economics happen normally, you'll have supply and demand will normalize. They will equate. And if the growth is going to be slow, it's going to be slow. But what happens is you have central governments, central bankers, and governments involving themselves so much in the economy, no one knows what normal is anymore. Don't know. Want to go to Al in San Jose, or did we already go to Al? Didn't we already talk to Al? Al in San Jose, how you doing, Al?
Hi, pretty good. How are you?
Good. You want to talk about Skechers?
I heard you talk about them earlier, and then so I was looking into it. Mm-hmm. And I noticed in the after-hours trading, it dropped another 12%.
Ooh, ouch.
Because of they missed expectations.
Uh-huh.
Then you stay away from it. How does that change the picture?
Well, it might drop it below. Remember I said you get out of it if it drops below the low it made in September? And this is a perfect example, Al, of why you have stops. They missed their numbers again, apparently. And if it drops below that low, you then get out and you can wait to see how far it's going to go, because it's obviously in a downtrend, and you want to wait till it's done with this downtrend to get back in. So if you own it, you know, I wouldn't sell it necessarily tomorrow. I might wait a day or two. But if it drops below the low it made in September and stays there, I'd get out. Okay, it's time for Invest Talk 101. We haven't had one in a while. There are many tools out there to help you decide how much you'll need to save for various needs, okay? And, you know, to help you put together your goals and get to that. One of these is called a ballpark estimate. Ballpark estimate. It's a single-page worksheet created by the American Savings Educational Council. And, again, it's called ballpark estimate. And it can help you kind of calculate what you'll need to save each year for retirement. So you might check that out. Remember, by the American Savings Educational Council, called Ballpark Estimate. Other tools. Well, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, or FINRA, has a college savings calculator, and Social Security Administration has a benefits calculator to estimate your potential benefits. And if you're over, 55? Social Security sends you a letter every year telling you what your benefits are going to be. So they give that. But you can go in and find out also. These are all kinds of calculators and helpful tools on the internet. And that's Invest Talk 101. Maybe you have a favorite website for retirement planning. Maybe you could share it with me. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
If you like to see the investment programs offered by KPP Financial, just go to Investments on investtalk.com. Click on the tab. Dynamic growth, active management for optimum returns, balanced income, steady yield for those who like less risk, select growth and income programs, handpick mutual funds for flexibility, strength, and diversity, and My 401k to help you make smarter choices in your employer's plan. See the details. Click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com.
Hello, Steve. I'm Tom from Detroit. I'm a podcast listener. I was calling about Citigroup. I was wondering what you thought about. I thought about it right here, and maybe adding some. Thanks.
I'm not a big fan of big banks. I've said that for a couple, few, maybe 4 or 5 years now. because of all the laws coming in on them, you know, from the Dodd, was it Dodd-Frank Act, Dodd-Graham, I don't remember the name of the act, but, you know, it is impacting all the big banks and their earnings. And if you look at Citigroup, they lose money. They lose money sales. They've been losing sales. They make earnings, but sales have been going down for 2+ years. In all the quarters of the last 2 years, only one quarter had an up quarter of 1%. The rest was either down 2% and up to down 10% every quarter. Why is that? Why? Return equity is only 8%, very low. It only pays a dividend of 1.3. It's not. I have a hard time wanting to be in the big bank sector because of these kind of weak numbers. Now, it's a $49 stock, going to make $5.08, so the P.E. is 10. That's pretty reasonable. But the five-year P.E. for Citigroup is 7 to 8, 16. It's always going to be low. It's going to be low. It's always going to be below the market P.E. for quite some time. And so there's not a lot of reason, catalyst, for me to want to be in this sector. So I'm not a big fan. Now, looking at a chart, it looks like it's come off its bottom. It had made a bottom in February, around $35. Moved up to 46 in by May, then fell back down to 38 in July, and now here it is at 49.58 here in October. So it looks like it's having higher highs and higher lows since January, which is a positive chart pattern. But I wouldn't add to it here. Looks like it's going to hit a lot of resistance between 52, 53, some and 54, somewhere in there. A lot of resistance. And I think it's there's just nothing in it that tells me I want to be in it, in any of the big banks, so, personally. Our time is up for this hour, everybody. I really appreciate you being with me. Remember, if you sign up for our next Saturday Morning Wealth Conference by midnight, November 5th, you can take $10 off the $45 ticket price. Get a little discount. You can sign up online on investtalk.com. You can do it right now. Love to have you there. It's going to be fun. We haven't done one in, 10, 11 months, in about a year. I'm Financial Advisor Steve Peasley, President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, we want to thank you for listening today. And let's meet up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.